You mentioned the waiting, but the other thing that jumps out to me looking at the sequential order, there were pockets for me, with a couple exceptions, like with Hanley Ramirez with the 69th overall.
Nice.
It was very nice, and I know we all think Hanley's a nice player.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 122 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy team. On today's show, we're going to recap the American League Labor Draft that took place out in Arizona. Mike Gianella representing BP out there. Mike, first of all, how are you feeling about your team now, a few days out of now?
Well, I mean, I like my team. We all like our teams when we come out of this, but I mean, it was beautiful in Arizona. It was 75, 80 degrees. I got to a couple games. I got to have some good breakfast. It was a great time.
Awesome. Brett, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I was not in 75 degree weather, but yeah, good nonetheless.
Awesome. So we're going to get into the labor recap in just a moment, but first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can subscribe today to Baseball Prospectus. Right now, we have Reliever Week going on with the BP Fantasy staff. We also had a really cool thing, which Brett and a couple other members of BP participated in, which is the Prospect Draft. So if you're in a Dynasty League, especially if you're in a startup or even in a redraft league, if you're looking for relevant minor leaguers and prospects for this upcoming season, definitely check that out. So subscribe to BP today. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. We are a top 10 podcast in terms of fantasy baseball right now up on iTunes. So very excited about that. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. We got actually a really fun comment, you guys, this week. It was actually on the BP site. It's from B. Cotman is the name, Cotman with a K. And he says, "Great job, guys. I have not listened to one of BP's podcasts in a while, and I really enjoyed this one. Lots of useful stuff." So that's kind of a strange compliment, but we'll definitely take it, right?
I'm just hoping he's not maligning like one of the other podcasts, because they're all good.
Yeah, it was definitely the strangest compliment we've received in a while, but these are our listeners. So, okay. Exactly. So we have two bits of current events that I do want to touch on before we get into the American League labor recap. David Price, he had an MRI last week. He ended up traveling to Indianapolis for a second opinion from Dr. James Andrews. And I guess everything came back clean. He has a quote-unquote unique elbow. But, I'm not sure what to make of Price right now, and I want to start off with you, Brett. How much are you considering in dropping him down in your rankings? Because we just did the starting pitcher preview show last week, and we had him in the five-star tier. So are you considering dropping him down at all based on this latest news?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the weird thing about Price is that I drop him, I would drop him a lot more in an AL only or really deep league format than in a mixed league. And in a mixed league, I'm probably anything like 14 teams or shallower, I'm probably not going to drop him a ton, just because there are always guys that you can grab if he ends up does needing surgery or is just terrible. But in a league where you really need to rely on him, I think it's tough to, it's tough to pay anywhere near what you were going to pay. I value him. I think Mike and I were talking about this right before labor, and you know, I said off the top of my head I thought I'd put him around, you know, 12 to 15 bucks, and I think he went for 14, right?
He went for 14 to Larry Schechter, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I think Mike, you were in the same, you were sort of on the same line as me on that one. So that one kind of makes sense. It's just there is room to play the market on price right now, but you don't want to get too cute.
Well, the other thing I'll add about price, just and I agree with all that, is that if you, and we'll get into this when we talk about labor, like if you buy price in an ale only or a deep league, you want him to be your number two, and you want him to go at about that amount. You don't want to buy him, you know, and then buy a couple, you know, like someone in the high teens, like in a couple guys at 10 or 11, you know, and that's kind of what Larry did. Like he backed price up with Dallas Keuchel and Felix Hernandez at, I think it was $14. It was 14 for Keuchel, 13 for Hernandez. And I mean, those prices for those guys are fine, but just the three of them together, there's just a lot of risk there. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I get the one side of it. If price is fine, if he comes back, you know, on opening day or more realistically, like 2 or 3 weeks in the season, that's great. But there's just a lot of bad signs there with him. So, yeah, if you're going to buy price, I think you have to buy an ace in front of him and do it that way.
There's just a ton of risk because, like you mentioned, in a deeper format, like an only or a deep mixed league, you just don't have a lot of options to replace him if he does end up having complications and he ends up having surgery and missing a huge chunk of the season. So, yeah, I agree with you guys there. The other piece of news that came out of spring training last week was David Dahl. He'd been held out of action with what was being called a back injury. It's now been diagnosed as a stress reaction in his ribs. They're going to reevaluate him in about 2 weeks, but there's a chance he could miss pretty much the remainder of spring training, and his availability for opening day, I would imagine, is in doubt right now. Brett, I'll start with you. How are you approaching David Dahl now? Because he went for $20 in labor NL. So how much should we be concerned about this with David Dahl?
I'm pretty concerned with Dahl. One, I think you have to expect that he'll spend probably at least the first 2 weeks of the season on the DL, given when he'll get back into game action. And, you know, you really, for a veteran, it can be less detrimental, but for a guy who's going into his first full major league season, you really don't want to miss time in spring training. You know, it makes everything more difficult as the season goes on, because you're kind of constantly playing catch up, especially if you don't have that experience. So I'm concerned about Dahl. Does that seem reasonable, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with all the one. I'm glad it wasn't a back injury. You know, now they're saying it was a stress reaction of the rib, which is a little bit better. But yeah, I'm concerned. You know, just to point out, because I was there at the NL auction. I did have to catch a flight, but I was there for the first like 90 minutes or so. Someone called Dahl out at 19, and then he went for 20. I suspect he'd been called out at 1 or 2. The bidding might have stopped at 15, and I could tell there were a couple of reactions in the room of surprise, you know, with both the call out and the price. So just judging by the nonverbal cues, most of the other experts agreed. And, you know, if I had to downgrade him, I think my price in the first update was 20. I'm probably going to push him to about like 14 or 15 in NL only in the next update. And that seems appropriate. And, you know, if I'm wrong and Dahl winds up putting up a $20 to $25 season, so be it. I agree with Brad. There's too much risk here.
Yeah, it's definitely something to monitor, and he could get off to a really slow start. Like Brett said, he could spend, you know, maybe a month in the minors, who knows, based on how this goes with the recovery. So definitely something to monitor. All right, let's dive into the AL labor recap. And Mike, we're going to go off of your, so if you're listening to this podcast, you can check out Mike's Expert League Auction Recap, which is up right now at Baseball Prospectus. Is it free? I can't remember.
It is free.
It is free.
Yes. So it is free. You can follow along as we go through it. And, Mike, the first thing you did was you outlined your three primary goals for the auction. And I want to touch on the first. And it was, I want to get Jose Altuve. And you did not, surprisingly.
Well, if I knew he was going to go for 45, I would have come up with a different plan. Historically, average and steals to a lesser degree have not been paid for fully in labor in the American League. And I was thinking, you know, if I paid 41 or 42 for him, which is about a par price, I'd build around him. I'd put an offense around him with some cheaper guys, and I'd worry about everything else later. You know, he came up and there was a bidding war, you know, and this is a nice segue because it kind of set the tone for the first few rounds of the auction. You know, it wasn't just Altuve. There were a lot of expensive players, and I kind of hung back. But, yeah, I didn't get him, and I kind of had to adjust pretty quickly. But, you know, you guys have listened to me long enough and talked to me long enough to know that it wasn't like I was panicking. It was more like, all right, well, you know, I didn't get him. You know, now it's on to, you know, having a balanced strategic auction like I've done in the past.
You know, we've talked a lot about it on this show in the past, especially last year, that experts, the touts seem to be spending a lot on the top hitters. They seem to be going for above what your projected values are and what your bid limits would be. So we saw that carry over once again here with the top, you know, three or four rounds where you basically sat back as everybody paid a premium for those elite hitters. So does it surprise you that we're seeing this trend continue? Or because I do think it's interesting that these guys are paying a premium up and above and beyond what I would expect to get a guy like Jose Altuve or Mookie Betts, Mike Trout. So does that surprise you that we've seen this continue?
Yeah, yes and no. It's, you know, so for one thing, I've got my other article coming out later this week, which is it's the general trends article about labor. I'm actually not sure when that's going to be out. It'll probably be Thursday or Friday. But I did get far enough to see that, you know, prices on the top 12 hitters, they didn't jump as much as I thought. They jumped up, I think it was about $16 for those 12 guys. So labor is paid more this year, but it wasn't crazy. What it really was the top five guys. So you had Altuve at 45. You had Mike Trout, who was an ex-player, at 42, which actually of these five guys I think was fair. Mm. You had Carlos Correa three players later at 37. You know, which for somebody who, you know, I get the potential, it just seems like a lot for someone who hasn't done it in a full season yet. You had Betts for 39, which, you know, it's kind of, I know he did last year as well, but, you know, I would expect some slippage, and that's probably a ceiling play. You know, but then the other guy, you know, and I think, George, you bought him in CBS, was Manny Machado at 38. Mm. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I get the deal with Machado, and I really enjoy him as a hitter, but if he doesn't run or if he doesn't run much, that's just going to be an overpay.
Yeah, for what it's worth, the prices in the CBS auctions are always a little bit higher on the top-end talent. I noticed that relative to labor. So a lot of this is depending on who you're playing against. So
absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about the pitching side of things, because that ties into your three goals here. And then we can dive into some of the actual picks you made and some of the auction dynamics that played out. But your other two goals were, I will not spend more than $85 on my pitching staff, if possible, and I would not spend more than $30 on closers. So briefly explain why you kind of laid that out as a strategic approach.
Well, first of all, the $85, that's not necessarily an arbitrary amount. Some of the older school thinking with auction strategy and philosophy is that $85 is kind of the appropriate amount to spend for pitching. Teams have started spending a little less. Like, we've seen more like $80 per staff, but this has happened to me in the past, and it's happened to me in Tout Wars last year. It's happened in other only leagues. I've spent close to $100 because there's so many bargains on the pitching side, and it's just easy to get sucked into buying like nine quality pitchers, and the pitchers are all good, but then you wind up in a position where even if you're getting value at every offensive position, you wind up with a soft offense. You know, it's, to look at it this way, if you buy a $160 offense and get $2 worth of value at every position, that's $188 worth of stats. That's really good, but usually 200, 210 is what wins. So you're already committing yourself to an offense that isn't the best in the league. And that's if everything goes right. And we know that everything never goes right. You know, what, something I want our listeners to keep in mind, you know, everything we're talking about right now in terms of, you know, I have a good team or I put value on my team, that's assuming your projections work out. And we all know, you know, even Brett and I, we won in labor 2 years ago on the mixed side. Not everything worked out. You know, our first two rounds, which you like to point out to us, George, in that draft were Ian Desmond and Troy Tulowitzki. So, you know, we know that some of these players that I'm happy about and confident about now won't work out. So the second point about closers, it's a similar thing, and it ties into that, where closers are undervalued in these leagues. And basically, it's really easy, if you're not careful, to get like three closers for $15 a piece at value. And it's the same problem. It's like, okay, so you've got three closers, you get 110, 120 saves, you win saves by a ton, you know, they help you in area and whip, but you really hurt yourself elsewhere. So I wanted to avoid that, and I just wanted to make sure that once I got to like $30 in, you know, in closers, that I'd stop. And, you know, again, it wasn't a hard and fast rule. You know, if I spent 86 or 87 on my pitching, that would have been fine. If I spent 31 or 32 on closers, that would have been fine. I just didn't want to spend 40 on closers or 100 on pitching.
Yeah, so you talked a little bit about how you didn't want to go overboard on starting pitchers specifically, but you know, looking at, if you go in the article, there's a link to the actual draft board where you can see what everybody went for and every owner's team. And there was an interesting tweet I found from, where is it on my sheet? David Adler had the tweet, and it was, AL labor loves pitching, high inflation, 68-32 on the split. So it feels like in this auction we saw people spending a lot more on pitchers, especially those in the middle of, you know, we not the top tier guys, but you know, I'm thinking like the James Paxtons of the world. It seemed like people were willing to push those types of guys up more than I would have expected. Did it feel that way to you while it was happening?
While it was happening, no, it felt that way. And, you know, while it's happening, and, you know, you know from being now in an online auction, it happens fast. Mm-hmm. So you might, like, Paxton felt high to me, but I didn't feel it as a trend. But later on, when I went back and looked at the prices, I had that reaction. I was like, yeah, you know, it really seemed that a lot of these mid-tier pitchers were pushed up. And, you know, some of it was just because, you know, price's value is downgraded. There's just some uncertainty about some of the other guys in the top. The top's a little bit thinner than it's been in the past. So what winds up happening, and this happens in every league, whether it's an expert league or not, leagues tend to split about, you know, 68-32. Dave Adler of Baseball HQ said, you know, it's been 60-30. You know, sometimes it's 69-31.
Right.
It's in that range. Leagues tend to spend that amount on hitting and that amount on pitching, regardless of the quality of the pitchers. So no one was going to push, you know, Yu Darvish to 35 or Chris Sale to 35 or a pitcher like that up. So what winds up happening, it's that second tier that gets pushed up a little bit. Now, you know, keep in mind, not all those pitchers are the same. You know, I obviously like the two pitchers I got for 17 apiece, and we'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, you know, there were a few pitchers in that, you know, in the teens and maybe a little bit below that. I don't think they were egregiously overpriced, but there was definitely some, you know, some helium with those guys.
All right.
I want to jump in with one question here. So, you alluded to it in your answer, but you took five different players at $17 exactly.
Yeah.
Rank them from your favorite buys to least favorite buys, and why.
This is going to be a long answer. You know, now this might sound weird, but I've got two spreadsheets. I've got one with the draft order, and I've got one with the team. I actually have to go look at the team to see, because at this point, like once the auction's over, you look more at players than values, you know, once it's set. So let's see. And the funny thing is, you said it was five $17 players?
No, you're right. It's only four. Okay. Still ranked. Right.
Okay, well. my favorite out of all these guys, I'd say, was Tanaka, Masahiro Tanaka. I called him out after I had bought two other pitchers, and it was only one of the $17 guys. I didn't think I'd get him. I thought he'd go for 20 or 21, given what some of the other pitching prices were. But, you know, and someone asked me this, you know, I think it was on Sirius, you know, when in the middle of the auction or during the break. You know, if you call someone out, you have to like him at the price if you stop on that price. And obviously I did. Tanaka's been really solid. He's not a big strikeout guy, but he just really knows how to pitch, and he's worked around his injury, and he's pitched through it. He's in his walk year. Well, we know he's not going to pitch 220 innings because of that injury, but he's fine. And the wins might not quite be there because the Yankees are in a quasi-rebuild. But, yeah, I really like him. Second, I'd say, is Jackie Bradley Jr. Solid hitter. I kind of underrated. I had a feeling I'd get him. I could tell when he came up, there wasn't the same excitement surrounding him. I think he might run a little more, but even if he doesn't, he's got a few steals in the profile, and I believe in enough of the power. You know, George, I know you're a Red Sox guy, so you might disagree, but I think Bradley's pretty solid at that price.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's streaky as all get out, but the defense keeps him in the lineup every day, and it's a loaded lineup, and he's going to at least hit for power. The batting average may fluctuate, but he's when you look at some of the other guys who went for like $17, like Nomar Mazara, right. Cole Calhoun, Carlos Gomez for $18, like Jackie Bradley at $17 is pretty good.
Yeah, and then I'd say third was another starter, Rick Porcello. Porcello is the first pitcher I bought, and you know sometimes with that first player, I was the next to last person to buy a player, so you're a little reluctant to put your toe in the water. You know, we all know he's going to regress a little bit this year, and you know he's not going to pitch at the same level. But I think people are discounting him a little bit too much. You know, as one of my readers pointed out, and this is a good point that I didn't really address in the starting pitcher piece, the defense behind those Red Sox pitchers really helps him out. So I would expect Porcello to slip. He's not going to win another Cy Young. The whip's going to go up. The ERA is going to go up. But at that price, he's solid. And then the fourth guy is Craig Kimbrel. I'm not really in love with Kimbrel, but you know, we kind of talked about this with closers. Surprisingly, Kimbrel and the other closer I got were the two closers at auction who, by my ratings, were, well, with the exception of the guys at the very end, they the cheapies. Kimbrel's price was really favorable for me, and I don't necessarily see him as the Kimbrel of old. But even if he pitches, you know, the limited number of innings he did last year, he still strikes out a lot of guys, and he's going to get the saves. And he has the contract, so you know, barring a catastrophe, I don't see the Red Sox, you know, switching to Thornburg or Joe Kelly or anyone else there. So yeah, that's how I'd rank them. But I like all four of them at those prices. I think they were good buys.
All right, so we just talked.
As do I.
Yeah. So all right, we just talked a little bit about Masahiro Tanaka and Rick Porcello. Those were two of your first three picks, but I want to talk a little bit about how you passed on the first 42 players. Like you mentioned, you were the second to last person to buy a player. So how much of I guess I should ask, what was it like for you to sit there and watch close to 50 players go off the board and just keep the mindset of I'm not going to overspend? And was that part of knowing that you were going to be able to clean up on some of the not the elite talent, but that some of the lower tier guys? Because if you look at what you actually end up doing, you only spent more than $20 on one player, I think, and that was Ian Kinsler at 23. So you didn't go out and spend a ton, but you were able to clean up on those $10 to $20 players, it looked like, just putting together a really solid team. So
yeah, that's right. There's only one guy in that 10 to 20 range I felt was overpriced, and that was by a dollar. So it's always a matter. I've done this before. In one of the CBS auctions, it was 2 years ago, I bought the 56th player, and that was the first guy I bought. And people there are vicious because, you know, it's a chat, and they're like, you know, come on, Mike, buy a player. And then they're really, you know, it's half joking, but they're almost half amazed. Like, you know, how could you bought a player yet? Like, you should. And you know, what it comes down to is if you have a good list of bids, like the ones that, you know, I publish out at Baseball Prospectus, and they're reliable, and, you know, most importantly, they add up to what the league can spend, you know you're going to get there. Like, you know you're going to wind up buying a team, and you're going to have value on that team. And, you know, there were a couple guys that I was, you know, looking at the beginning. Like this. So there were a couple guys I was close to pulling the string on those first few players. But really, there are also more than not, there were a lot of players that I looked at where I was like, yeah, I just don't like these prices. They're too high, and I'd rather wait for the guys I want to get, as opposed to just pigeonholing a player onto my team where I feel like, yeah, this guy's okay, but I don't feel good about him. And yeah, so 40, actually, according to this, it was a 44th player in. I bought Rick Porcello for 17. And then two picks later, I got Jay Happ for 8. And then four picks after that, I got Masahiro Tanaka for 17. So that problem always tends to solve itself. Now, at this point, I had all pitchers. So I was kind of looking at my offense like, well, it's good I'm spending money. But, all these offensive guys are still going by the board, and the prices are still high.
Yeah, and this is, what Mike says is absolutely right. I mean, when you go into an auction with when you go into an auction confident in your bids and your values, while other owners may look at you like they think you're nuts or whatever, it's really important to stick with your plan going forward, at least in terms of a value standpoint. Now that said, this being a little bit more structured in your bids makes a lot more sense in an only league than it does in a mixed league. My guess is we'll get into talking about this after my mixed tout auction, because it's going to be a little bit of a different conversation than we're having now about yeah. Mike's AL team and about, the NL team that you'll buy also. It's in mixed, you have to be a little bit careful. And George alluded to it before about CBS. And it's sort of that idea where you don't want to get in a position where you don't have high-end players in a mixed league, because the difference between your $1 to $5 players and your $10 to $15 players in mixed leagues, not that great. Only leagues, it's enormous. So when you can kind of collect a stable of $10 to $20 players, like the roster that Mike put together, you can really see how it fills out in a league like this. But if you were to do the same thing in a mixed league, you might look at that roster at the end and be like, okay, where's the beef?
Yeah, there's the risk, and I won't mention him. We've talked about him before. A couple of years ago in Tout Mix, someone left, well, he would have left $60 on the table, and he made a big bid on an injured pitcher so he'd get the fab back. But really, he left $60 on the table. So yeah, in mix, it's a whole different game. And what Brett did last year with Stars and Scrubs, I'm a big proponent of in mixed. In only, I prefer the balanced approach. Unless the league is letting you, get the guys cheap, and that kind of we won't talk about tonight. But that's kind of what happened on the NL labor side. I did my shadow draft there, and I would have wound up with two $30 players in that league just because the prices at the top were low.
Yeah, that's important to keep in mind. Really good point that it is much easier to do Stars and Scrubs in a mixed because of the replacement level. But in an only, I mean, this is the thing when I look at your team, Mike, there aren't any holes. We talked a lot about this on our recaps and our expert league previews and in season, that it's just really tough to pick up guys who get significant playing time in season. There's just not a ton on the waiver wire. So that's the one thing I do like when I look at your offense is they're really, you have solid starters up and down the board.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Yomer Sanchez who, if he does start is a scrub, but really otherwise it's starters. The other thing to point out about labor too is that, so Tout Wars is more liberal with your pickups. You can speculate on minor leaguers. There's $0 fab bids. Labor's old school. So $1 minimum out of $100 budget. You cannot stash minor leaguers on the in labor, which, Brett knows all too well. We all know all too well on the mix side. The same thing in the AL. So, if there's some guy tearing it up that wasn't taken, You know, this past weekend, you've got to wait and you've got to structure your bid. So yeah, it's really important. You can sink pretty quickly if you have a roster with 8 or 9 starters and the scrubs you took don't pay off. And the balance in this format is even more important than in tout or a league where you can speculate on guys in the minors.
Yeah, I also want to give you a quick shout out for taking for taking a guy who I really, really like as an AL only reserve with your very last reserve pick in Joey Wendell.
People were really excited about him. It was very funny.
Oakland is such a wasteland, and I could absolutely see him getting 350 at bats for no good reason whatsoever, and I think he can, you know, he can hit for a little bit of average, and he can play enough to to stick. And you know, Jed Lowrie's going to get hurt probably in like an hour. So
he was an afterthought too. It was a funny thing that I looked at my roster and I looked at Sanchez, and I'm like, yeah, I should take a middle infielder. And of all the names out there, by far he was the best one left.
Didn't Eric Sogard get like a bunch of playing time for Oakland? Like they've had some real bad options at second base recently.
The face of Major League Baseball, I believe he did.
Well, he wasn't good. I mean, whatever. All right, that's a conversation for another day. But you know, to get back to the article a little bit, you know, you have your headlines here are great because it's all like more waiting. The waiting isn't the hardest part. It just seems like you spent the whole draft just in agony waiting for the value to come to you. So I want to, you know, highlight this point because I think it's important for our listeners who may be going into home leagues in the next month or so. And when they see other owners overspending relative to what they believe are, they're confident in their bid limits and what they believe the value of players are, that it is really important to sit back and wait and not just decide, all right, I have to get a player and I will overspend at this point.
Yeah, so I'd say this is, you know, Brett often talks about draft philosophy where in the first, you know, is it 10 rounds, Brett, you're just going for value, and then between, you know, 11 and 15, it's dependent, and it isn't until like the last third or half of the draft that you're starting to look at slots. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really the last third. So right. If things have gone the way you plan, you probably just want to take pure value in the first 15 rounds. But yeah, beyond that, you're talking about beyond that. So, that's when you adjust.
So that's kind of what I did, and it wasn't design, but you know, it was the idea of in the first 2/3 of this auction, I was looking at value, and I was like, all right, how can I get value on my team? Now, obviously, if you get into a position where you're going to fill up your outfield or you're going to, you know, as I talked about before, you know, you see 6 or 7 starting pitchers who are all value or 4 closers, you have to rein yourself in. You know, that's only an auction is different than a draft. In a draft, the room kind of controls that. But otherwise, there's really no reason not to just play value until you get to the last third of the auction and you're like, okay, well, now it's time for me to look at what's left at the board. You know, who else has slots to fill and what I need to do. And that was something, you know, you mentioned the waiting, but the other thing that jumps out to me looking at the sequential order, which is part of the, you know, which is part of the article, there's a link to it. There were pockets for me, you know, with a couple exceptions, like, with, you know, Hanley Ramirez with the 69th overall, you know, pull.
Nice.
It was very nice. And I know we all think Hanley's a nice player. I got the pitchers in a clump within 6 picks. I got Jackie Bradley and Sam Dyson back to back. And then later, you know, there was a really big run of, you know, 6 players between Dylan Bundy and Alcides Escobar. And people were kind of amazed because at that point I had over $100 to spend. And Dave Adler, who we mentioned before of Baseball HQ, also had over 100. And I could hear, and I mentioned this in the article, I could hear the serious guys talking, you know, how's Mike going to spend his money? You know, what's he going to do? He has 4 players on offense. All the offense is disappearing. He didn't push on Byron Buxton. He didn't push on Lorenzo Cain. You know, and then I knew, you know, because I've been in this position before, I knew I was going to get value. And with the exception of Escobar, who was a par buy, you know, I had him at ranked at 12, and I got him for 12. You know, all these guys are undervalued. And I know Brett, you know, with the exception of, you know, I know you love some of these guys. Like, I know you love Shin-Soo Choo. You know, when you saw I got him for 10, you were probably doing cartwheels.
Yeah, I adore Shin-Soo Choo at that price. That is him and Victor Martinez at a combined $22 is is awesome.
Yeah, someone asked me, do you want to fill up your DH? And it's like, well, not necessarily, but, you know, this is Victor Martinez at $12. Like, he could play, like, he'd get 350 plate appearances and be worth that.
Yeah, it's not like you're buying Jack Cuss.
Right.
Yeah, so the offense, I do like some of the other picks you had. Ulieski Gurriel at 16. Hanley Ramirez at 20 just stands out to me as probably the best value. And
He was the best hitting value. And the thing that was funny, Steve Gardner brought him up, I think hoping to sneak him. And the bidding, he bought him up at a mid price. You know, I heard another podcast say, I just want to bring this up for a second. Some people talk about how they like to bring up a player at a price that's $4 or $5 below what they think he's worth, because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to hear somebody for Juan and the slow bidding and this and the other. I disagree with that completely. Like, no, I won't bring up a guy for Juan. I'll bring him up for $3 or $4. But I don't like that idea of being like, all right, I'm going to bring up a guy and, you know, five below his price. That just slows things down and creates bargains. And that's what I'm with Hanley. So, you know, Steve, you know, a friend of the show, brought him up, I think, for 15 or 16. I could tell there were people who just didn't want to touch him. And my price on him was 24. So when I got him for 20, you know, and when the auctioneer gave it to me, I could see the look on Steve's face. His look was like, yeah, I really should have went at least one more.
Brett, do you agree with that? Well, I guess what's your general strategy when you're nominating a player that you do want to buy? Do you nominate him at what you want to pay, or do you try and go low? And
it so depends on the room and who the player is. And this is part of the advantage of knowing your league and knowing your fellow owners, where if you It's the kind of stuff that only really becomes apparent after doing a couple of auctions with a pretty steady group, and that you know which players are going to get bid up. You know, you get to a point in certain leagues, and, you know, I'm sure everyone has, you know, one or two leagues like this where you know, ownership has stayed pretty consistent, and you can, you know, you can say, okay, I want this guy for $25, but he's gonna go for like $30. You know, getting some guys out early that you think are going to go for way over price, or getting guys out early that you think are going to go for way under price, is really dependent on what you think the people around you are going to do. There's no great philosophy on what to throw players out at, what numbers to use, what order to use. Other than, I will say, I do love throwing out players at dollar values that end in a 9, because there is something very, very slightly psychological about making someone say a whole number. Like, if you throw a guy out at 29, there shouldn't be, but there is a little bit of a tax mentally on saying 30. From other owners, as I've historically found.
And I've heard the way to get around that is if someone throws out someone at 29 to say 31, because you're not doing the round number at the end. I'm serious. I've heard someone say that's a valid counter to that idea.
That is the first of many Brett Sayre auction secrets, which we've been slowly extracting from him over the years on this podcast. So
yeah, we're gonna put a book out next winter, watch, and it's gonna be like Brett and Mike's auction secrets.
Seriously, yeah. It's like an art form. Like, I remember last year, because Mike, you and I watched Brett draft, and it was like watching the World Series of Poker. It was intense, and it was fun. So, all right, what else?
I'm looking forward to doing it again.
It's gonna be good. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, so we should do a show from New York. We should do a live show. That'd be awesome.
Right, well, let's plan that. Let's plan that at some point.
I think we just did. All right. Brett, okay. I guess, are there any guys on Mike's team that you want to ask him about, or anything specific that he did? Because I have some minor stuff, but, we've kind of hit on most of the big things so far.
Yeah, I think we've hit on everything. I really like the Andrew Bailey Houston Street dollar pairings at the end, and I really like Keone Kella, who Mike took in the reserve round. I think he is going to be closing at some point in 2017 for the Rangers. I think he's the best of those three relievers, the naturally best of those three relievers, those three being Sam Dyson, Matt Bush, and Kella. But that's one of my I guess hot takes. But he is, DRA loves him. He was recovering from his injury last year and still struck out a ton of guys. And he's gonna be really good.
Yeah.
Other than that, read the article. The article is great. I mean, we could ask you questions about the article, but yeah, people are better off just reading the article.
Well, and actually, so since we didn't do this as long as I thought we would. I just want to ask: was there anything about either the AL or the NL? We haven't spent a lot of time on each one, but just from a wider trend perspective, I don't know how closely you follow. Was there anything that jumped out about either league that was different or weird to you guys?
I have one thing, but I'll let Brett go first if you have something.
The one thing that I noticed in the AL, I don't know whether it's just because of the crop or whether it's because, Chris Liss isn't in this league, but there were really no reaches on prospects.
True.
Which I found a little strange. Like, I was looking for the pockets of it as I was going through it, and there's like Gleyber Torres for $1 and Franklin Barreto for $1, and I'm probably missing like one other person, but that's almost it.
Raul Mondesi for $6, and then Moncada went for $14, I think. But
yeah, well, I don't consider Mondesi and Moncada in there because they're expected to get a lot of playing time. I'm just talking about guys that you're buying to stash and hope that they come up in June or July on a little bit of a early time frame. But yeah, there was really very little of that, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah,
Frazier went in the reserve round. I feel like in years past,
a lot of people were surprised by that.
Frazier would have gone for like $2 or $3.
That's a good.
Well,
point.
Something I'll say, so you had the list factor. I think something else. So the two besides me, the other new guy in the room was Clay Link, and Clay, who had also been in the CBS AL auction with you, George. I don't know if he didn't study AL labor as much, but he's the one who bought Altuve, and he kind of treated this a lot like that auction. So he bought Altuve for 45, he bought Lucroy for 21, he bought Verlander for 24 among the first 11 players. I mean, he shot right out of the gate, complete opposite of me, and they bought Benintendi, your boyfriend there for 20.
See,
which
I don't
actually
I don't like I don't
price.
I don't like him at 20. Like I feel like 18.
Well, 18 is my bid on him, but right. I think 20 is like kind of okay. Where it's like if you like Benintendi, pay 20.
Sure.
But so the other side of it is and people kind of remark this to me. Larry Schechter, and I kind of consider this a high compliment. He was always the guy who kind of played it the way I did. The one difference about Larry, and he was kind of atypical for him this year. Usually he grabs the ace, like someone like Sale or Darvish for like 30, and then he fills in behind him. And it was a little weird. He went with the three heads with Price, Keuchel, and Hernandez. This year he grabbed Brian Dozier as his anchor on offense for 30. But otherwise, if you look at Larry's team, he and I have very similar approaches. He might disagree a little bit on the players that he likes. But if you look at his team, he's got a lot of starters on offense. It's a very value-oriented team. The outfielders, there's no one exciting, but it's a lot of potential. Leonis Martino, I was bidding on him against. I don't regret not getting him, but, bad average, but, home runs and a fair amount of steals. And Larry, I found it afterward, was dumping average. So, his plan, I know you hate Todd Frazier guys, but his plan, based on that foundation, he kind of met his plan. Before I'll let you guys take it over, I think that Larry and I, being in the auction together, we butted heads a lot on value, and that changed things a lot because there was less of that chasing. With Liss in the auction previously, you had more of that prospect love, and you're right, we didn't see that.
Yeah, so my quick point, I kind of touched on it early in the show when I brought up James Paxton at $16, but I brought this up on Twitter actually while it was happening, and I think I tweeted something like, I'd rather, you know, Michael Fulmer at $12 or James Paxton at $16, and it was, you know, the James Paxton brigade came out, and don't get me wrong, I like James Paxton, I just think, you know, paying $16, you need those innings. And it just felt to me like some of the prices were strange in terms of who went for what. Like, Sean Manaea only went for 11, but Lance McCullers got 13. And I think people were willing to take more chances on guys in this draft and in that sort of just below that ace tier. And part of that might be, like you said, Mike, you know, not having David Price go for, you know, 25 to 30 gave people more options. But, like, Danny Salazar at 16, like, it just felt like those guys to me are the type of pitchers I want to – Aaron Sanchez at 17. I want to stay away from those kinds of guys. I think that's the one thing that you've talked a lot about in your valuations pieces is that's where you get in trouble.
There's a lot of, you know what it is with too, there, like when you get past the aces, there's a lot of variability in opinion, mm-hmm. you know, especially at the bottom. And, you know, I talk about this in the article, I won't dwell on it, but if there's one mistake I made, it's not that I dislike the values. This is another guy I know you dislike, Brett, but, you know, Dylan Bundy at 8 and Chris Tillman at 4, I'm fine with them price wise, but had I known how many pitchers at the end, I'd say between like $3 and $7 I liked better were going to be there. I would have avoided Bundy in particular and gotten three guys for $12 or $13 combined who I liked better. You know, it's just one of those things that's hard to gauge as you're going along where you're like, all right, I'm going to pass on this guy who's $3 underpriced because someone, you know, better might come along who's $3 or $4 underpriced. Like that's hard to do. But, you know, if I go back and do it again, I would do that. There was more variability on pitching than I would have expected.
So, Mike, who was your favorite buy that you did have?
I'd say it was, you know, Hanley's up there. But I'd say at his price, it was Corey Dickerson. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we've talked about him. I know you're kind of down on him, George, and I get that.
But for nine and an only?
Yeah, good. $9 and an only and on the good side of a platoon. You know, yeah, the injury risk is there, but there's so much good that can happen with him at that price and not very much bad unless he misses, you know, almost the entire season.
Who was someone that you didn't go after that in retrospect you wish you had?
Well, you know, a lot of this just kind of comes down to, you know, I talked about the last third of the auction and how, you know, you're looking more at position than value. So I wound up with James McCann at 7, and I just, you know, I did not really like that. That was just a matter of having to, you know, get a catcher and also spend my money. There were a number of catchers who, you know, went for prices that I liked them a little bit better. And, you know, I think another element of that was that I would have been better off spending a little bit more on a catcher. So it wasn't even a specific player. It was just more the position in general. And honestly, if I had even gotten somebody at a dollar at the end and moved that money, you know, those $6 elsewhere, I think I've been better off.
Yeah. Brett, really quickly here. You have your choice of the entire board. Who was the best value that was one of the lower kind of dollar bid guys? Because I'm going to pick Francisco Liriano at $3, but who did you like that went pretty cheap?
Liriano's a good one. I think $3 for Blake Swihart is really good in a two catcher AL only league. I think he's going to have the eligibility and he's going to be playing every day by Memorial Day. So I think he'll earn that back. I like not to keep harping on the same people over and over again, but I like Jerks and Profar at $2. I like Luis Valbuena at $2. There's a lot of risk on that Angels team, and Valbuena hits righties really well. I mean, other than that, I like Cole Hamels a lot at 21. You know, he went for just above sort of the much riskier tier than he, and well under where the true aces went. But in AL only, I'd consider Hamels to be a back end ace, and I probably would have I would have expected him to go closer to 23 or 24.
Yeah, I hit on Liriano. I liked Steve Pierce at $3. Mike knows I drafted him in the CBS league for like.
I liked him too.
Yeah, that one seems obvious to me. The other is Dan Vogelbach at our friend Steve Gardner for $8. Yeah. $8 is fair for Vogelbach.
The tricky thing again about so. The balance and the part about getting all these bargains where people are oohing and aahing in the middle. And, you know, it's funny. Some people, you know, Brett likes Chew. Some people who are valuation geeks like I am were raving about Melky Cabrera at 10, you know, just because of what he's earned.
In an average league, Cabrera at 10 is really, really nice. We didn't talk about him, but it's a really nice bid.
He earns like 15 to 20 every year just by like showing up. But the problem with that is, and this happened particularly in the outfield, is that there are all these bargains later, and you have to kind of reconcile yourself with the fact of like, all right, there's, you know, in ProFar fits this model too of, you know, I'm value lower than you do, Brett, but it's true. Like you do wind up missing on some players like that. And it's that thing of like, well, if I get a player like Cabrera who can earn 15 to 20 at 10, I have to kind of accept that I'm not going to get, you know, a player for two or three who can earn 10 to 12. And there's plenty of guys like that. You know, they show up every year. So that's kind of the sacrifice with this plan. And, you know, you could go the route, and I know some people do it, and this is one of the reasons I wanted Altuve. You could go the route of saying, all right, I'm going to get an anchor for $30 or a little bit higher, and then try to do value after that. You know, that's kind of what Larry did with Dozier. You know, and though I think Dozier was overpriced there, if Larry thought he was worth that, you know, then he would have been very satisfied with his results.
Yeah, I mean that's a really important point, is that you know we've talked about this before in previous years, but you're never going to come away with the perfect auction. There is no such thing as the perfect auction. There's always going to be a little extra value somewhere that you look back and go, okay, yeah, maybe I would have swapped a couple of these guys out for a couple of those guys. But the worst thing you can do is get cute during an auction and assume there's going to be value later and then get shut out, because that's when you really get screwed. You take the value when you get the value and you move on.
The other thing too, and this is something I it's odd, you know, I buy my sheep prices. I overspent on Gurriel. I overspent on McCann. I overspent. There was one other player that I overspent on by a buck. And, you know, it's funny because in the past I would have beat myself up for that or been like, you know, no, I have to get the value. This year I decided it's more important to actually complete building a team and, you know, live with the fact that, well, there's, you know, a couple players that I'm just going to miss on. And I was perfectly fine with that. And I think I was much better off doing that than either leaving 10 to 12 bucks on the table or, you know, buying, as I said before, you know, $90 pitching staff and be like, well, all right, this is a great staff, but I'm missing something here on offense.
Yeah, I think Brett kind of hit the nail on the head when he said it's okay to go, you know, a dollar over here or there to get a value, but you can't do it all the time. That's when you run into trouble. So I think you're right that you did it selectively when you had a chance to get a player. So
well, you build up goodwill. I mean, right. that's why you get values early. If you're consistently getting $2 to $3 values on some players early, that gives you the flexibility to, you know, to spend an extra dollar or two on a player you might not necessarily have at the beginning of an auction, but that makes your roster better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not a fan of saying I want to get specific player at, unless it's like Kershaw or, you know, one of the top two or three guys. I mean, you can't go in and say, I'm going to draft Andrew Benintendi and I'll pay whatever it takes. That's just a way to really get yourself in a bind.
Well, again, that's the Altuve example. The reason I said I was targeting him wasn't because I was like, I have to have him at all costs. It was, I see a buying opportunity here and I'm going to take it. And when that opportunity went away, that's the difference. Some people wring their hands when it's like, I can't get Kershaw. You know, to shift to the NL briefly, Derek Carty, this was kind of a funny moment. So he had the first call because he won Labor last year. And he gave like a speech about Kershaw. Well, first of all, the night before, he's like, you know, I'm worried about Kershaw's back. I'm not going over 36. So then right before his call, he gives this long speech about Kershaw, about how, I know you guys are going to, you know, force me to get him, so I'm just going to get out of the way, and he goes on and on. And then he calls Kershaw out for 40, and then he pays 44 for him. And I'm kind of like, well, putting aside the value with Kershaw, we all know the deal. He can earn it, and if he doesn't earn it, you know, there's still so much, you know, of a base there, even if he only pitches 120, 140 innings, if the back crops up again.
Right.
But my question isn't about the player, it's about the gamesmanship. Like, why put yourself in that position to essentially announce, you know, I know you guys are going to stick me with this guy, here's my price, you know, and someone's going to be like, all right, well, you pretty much just told me you have to get this guy, so I'm going to push you up at least a couple bucks. Like, that's where you kind of fall into problems with that approach.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of calling attention to my strategy, like, if it's happening, or especially ahead of time. I'm not a fan of that. But, Brett, any final thoughts here? And then we'll let Mike get the last word.
No, I've gotten all my final thoughts in.
Good. More for Mike and I. All right. Mike, final thoughts.
You know, it's so, you know, you asked at the beginning if I like the team. I think it's got the balance I talked about. It's put together pretty well. I think it's a little light in steals, although what I notice is that there's a couple teams that don't have any speed at all. So I should get at worst 3 or 4 points in steals. You know, pitching is a little thin. You know, we talked about this offline, you know, at the bottom.
I was going to mention this.
But it's AL only, so everybody's going to kind of have a little bit of that anyway. I think it's a solid squad. It looks like in a couple other projection systems, I haven't run it through the PFM, it projects out as a top 2 or 3 team. You know, and I know the whole deal, you know, projection systems, you know, are going to tell you, you know, something very broad. But I think I had a good auction.
I texted you this morning and I said, quote, we can get into it on the pod, but I'm just not that enthusiastic about your pitching staff, which means you probably did a really good job, because that's a lot. That means it feels to me like that you got a lot of value then.
I'll jump in here as sort of a third party,
but considering it is an AL only league, I actually really like I really like Mike Staff, you know, with the caveat that I hate Chris Tillman.
You can curse if you want. That's okay.
He blows. But
he blows.
No, but to my point, like, I don't think your staff is exciting, but that's precisely the reason to like it. Is I think there's a lot of you're guaranteed those innings. Like Porcello, Tanaka, like, those are 200 inning guys, and that's going to carry you.
So here's another thing. Here's an exercise. So you look at Porcello, Tanaka, and Happ, and if you cut their earnings in, you know, in half from last year, that you've still got $42 in earnings. So there's plenty of room for them to slip from what they did last year and still, you know, at least return value and at par. Now, you know, we all kind of know the deal. You know, Porcello popped up and there's some risk in his profile because he's not, you know, I don't think as good as he was and as much as I think a lot of what he did is sustainable. No one would argue he's an elite pitcher. You know, I'm not saying that, and nobody would. But on the other hand, there's enough there that he could be, you know, a $20 pitcher. I don't think that would surprise anyone. You know, Jay Happ's kind of the same thing. You know, it's funny, when I got Happ and they brought me on the radio to talk about him, they were like, yeah, we don't like Happ, but, you know, at $8, like, I don't see how much can go wrong there. And that's kind of what the deal is with just about everyone I have. You know, the one risky guy I have is Bundy, but I kind of wanted to take that risk with at least one pitcher and have a little bit of that upside.
Yeah, like Porcello, Kyle Hendricks, and Happ, I think, are the most obvious, like, you put the quotes around them, regression candidates in, like, the zeitgeist right now. So people are afraid to draft them to quote unquote overspend. So that's where you get value in these cases.
They're underemphasizing the value of the defense in each of one of those cases, I believe, too. I think that might be where there's a gap right now between the perception and where the fantasy community isn't catching up. I think there's value, especially with Hendricks, you know, but there's value in each of those teams' defenses and what they do for those pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 122 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe today to the one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. We will answer your questions at 6 in the morning if you send them. We're awake. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at BrettSayerBP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I'm at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes. We appreciate all the ratings and reviews, guys. It really means a lot. We want this to be the best fantasy show out there. So keep it up. We really appreciate it. So for Mike Gianella and Brett Sayers, George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Till our next show, we'll be back next week. What do we want to talk about next week, guys?
Yeah, definitely send in your questions, because right now for the next couple weeks we're going to be freeform. Oh god,
did we get Steve Gardner? Do you know?
We didn't, but that's actually a good idea is for one of us to invite Steve on the show. You know, I mentioned Labor NL, but we didn't talk about it.
Yeah,
that might be good. Have him on for like 20 or 30 minutes to talk about each side.
Yeah, and then we can talk about relievers. Just kidding.
Agreed. So if you're listening at home, Steve, thanks for coming on next week.
I'm actually going to send him a message right now. This is really professional how we do this, by the way.
Very professional.
An impromptu show meeting. Well, this is better than the ending to the Oscars, I have to admit. So we at least topped that. All right, so that's going to do it for all of us. We'll be back next week with Steve Gardner. Thanks for listening. So long, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.